It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me. And Max joins us now to talk about movies. Hi, everybody. How are you? All good?
We're good.
What happened to you, Max?
How are you?
Are you plugged into the
wrong
place?
Okay, I must have been plugged into the wrong place. I'm good now. Good. Thank you, Ian.
Rookie mistake. It's okay.
I know. It's only my 19th year doing this.
Max has been plugged into the wrong place
all
today.
Today.
Yeah,
right?
All day today.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the showbiz portion of the show, and we've got a trio of movies to share with you, two of which actually opened in St. Louis last week, but we couldn't review them because this show was preempted by basketball.
That's right.
Today we're preempted by us. I don't know how that works exactly. I checked the schedule. Apparently I'm filling in for me.
We're doing last week's show today.
Yeah, well, part of it when we get to those two movies, but let's start with the big blockbuster movie that is the only new movie opening in St. Louis, and this happens sometimes when a blockbuster comes out. This one is called Kong, Skull Island.
That's right. It was originally going to be called Skull Island, and I think they were worried that people wouldn't know it had any kind of relation to King Kong.
Yeah.
Even though Skull Island has featured prominently in both Peter Jackson's 2005 version and, of course, the original 1933 version as well.
I would not have known that, and I've seen all of them.
Is this a true story?
Skull Island was especially the Peter Jackson. It was a big part of it. Anyway, so they're calling it Kong Skull Island.
Anyway,
which does not roll off the tongue. I always want to say King Kong Skull Island.
I don't know why they took the king out of there. Before we get going with this, I just have to say something about this kind of a movie. And I said the same thing when I talked about the John Wick 2 sequel a few weeks ago, which is you should know what you're getting when you walk in the door. It's like, you know, if you went to see La La Land and afterwards you said, I didn't like it because it was a musical, you should have known it was going to be a musical going in the door. John Wick 2, ultra violent, very few words for Keanu Reeves. That's going to be good. And it turned out to be a good movie.
Love that movie.
And the same thing here with Kong, Skull Island. You have to know that you're going to see gigantic creatures CGI'd on the screen. And it's going to probably be a silly plot about that, but you're going to see a lot of action.
But I think there are good monster movies and bad monster movies.
Yes, but I'm saying don't go in there expecting a slow romantic indie.
No, but I think even going into it knowing you're going to see a big monster movie, that doesn't give it a pass either.
No.
And I did not enjoy Kong Skull Island.
Oh, okay. So we have a disagreement on this.
We do.
Because this gave me exactly what I expected.
Good.
Exactly. What I expected.
It did not for me.
But the bar wasn't very high. That's my point about all this. You go to a King Kong movie, I'm not expecting a fantastic movie. I'm expecting pretty much exactly what I got.
And see, I was comparing it to not only the original King Kong and, of course, Peter Jackson's remake and the 1976 Man in Suit, which is a bad, bad movie with Jessica Lange and Jeff Bridges.
Jessica Lange's character was named Dwan.
Dwan.
D-W-A-N. Not Dawn. But Dwan.
She was probably the best part about that movie, though.
Maybe her parents were dyslexic.
Maybe they were. I think that also had Jeff Bridges and Charles Grodin.
Yes, it did. You're right. Now, what did you think about Peter Jackson's three-hour-plus epic back from 2005?
Way too much.
Yeah, way too much. Good for what it was, though. Yeah. And I thought Andy Serkis, who did the motion capture for King Kong, gave Kong a lot of personality. And that was one of the big failings for me with Kong Skull Island, was that Kong himself, who has had a ton of personality, even in the 1933 version, wasn't anything except angry here. And if you're going to give me a King Kong movie, give me some interesting King Kong.
Well,
that doesn't really do anything.
Let me just say that the Kong character, not that I'm a monster defender of any kind,
sure,
has some reason to be upset. Considering the first time we see him, Samuel L. Jackson, who plays an army colonel, is in one helicopter with a machine gun, and there are a half dozen others, and they're coming in like it's Robert Duvall and the Flight of the Valkyries in Apocalypse Now.
There's a lot of Vietnam imagery in this.
Because it takes place in 1973, and they ripped off Apocalypse Now in several places. But the first time we see Kong, he's 100 feet tall, which makes him bigger than some of the other Kongs that we've seen.
I think the biggest ever, yes.
And these helicopters are coming at him, and the first instinct they have, because they're soldiers after all, is to open fire on this gigantic alien beast that's in their midst. That's, I think, why Kong is a little bit upset through the whole movie. Every time they see him, they're shooting at him. And let me say one other thing about that. After a while, isn't it like you're fighting Superman and you have to realize the bullets are having no effect?
Yeah.
Well, stop shooting. You have a pistol. It's a pistol. You've tried to shoot him with a 50-millimeter machine gun from a helicopter, and you have fired missiles at him, and he batted them away, or even if they hit him, it didn't hurt. And now you're going to take out your sidearm? I have to defend myself against Kong. I'll shoot this. That's like me going against somebody with a pea shooter.
He's probably mad, too. There's not any trees big enough to get into.
True.
Yeah.
Or a Mrs. Kong, for that matter.
Yeah.
There might have been a Mrs. Kong, but these strange, I think, anime, like cartoon-influenced monsters called Skull Crawlers, which have two arms and nothing else, really,
have
massacred the other Kongs, right?
Maybe.
And, possibly. Is that too much of a spoiler, do you think?
No.
Skull crawlers.
Skull crawlers, yes, that's what
they're
dubbed.
There are other giant creatures in this movie.
And we've seen that in other iterations of Skull Island, again, with the Peter Jackson and the 1933 version. You have the big spider and the octopus. Those were in those versions, and they're in this one, too.
Kong versus T-Rex was in
the very first one. Yes, and in the 2005 version as well. The adventure films that I was thinking of that I really enjoy, stuff like, you know, the first Jurassic Park, they've got some really great human characters. This film doesn't have any great human characters.
No, it does not.
Tom Hiddleston, who you might know as Loki from the Marvel films.
I like to think of him as Mr. Jennifer. Mr. Taylor Swift.
He was for a brief time there. Like everybody is for a brief time. I think we've all been Mr. Taylor Swift for
and
a brief time.
And then you get a song written about you.
Right. Exactly.
I should have said, he's one of the subjects of many Taylor Swift songs.
He seems sort of befuddled here. He kind of doesn't, I don't know if he knew what kind of a movie he was in. Sam Jackson knows what kind of movie he's in.
Yes.
He's in a big monster movie. He's going to go kill the monster. That's great.
Yes.
Good for him.
Absolutely.
Brie Larson, it does your standard, I just won an Oscar, so I better sign on to whatever big budget movie I can get into.
To her in just a minute. Go ahead.
It's strange that she describes her character as an anti-war photographer.
Yes.
That line kind of made me cringe a little bit, because I think that's sort of strange. Sure, cover wars and have your own point of view, but I'm not sure anybody who's ever worked for Life magazine or has said, oh, I'm an anti-war photographer. I think that's a little strange.
All right, while we're on the subject of the female character, let's talk about this for just a second. In all of the Kong movies, there has never been a reason for the woman to be there. None whatsoever.
Except he likes blondes. King Kong likes blondes.
Yeah. Apparently.
Faye Ray, Jessica Lange, Naomi Watts, Brie Larson.
Yes, but in those earlier movies, the humans capture Kong and bring him back to the United States, New York, in the first two movies cases.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he scales first the Empire State Building and then later the World Trade Center. And he's got the girl in his arms. And in this movie, there's no capturing Kong and there's no semi-romantic subplot between the interspecies.
They do sort of share this moment just to give Kong and the blonde some sort of moment. But yeah, there's no reason for her to be there.
None
but
whatsoever.
There's really no reason for any of these characters to be there. I will say, though,
I'll grant you that.
The only character in the movie, including Kong, the only character who has any semblance of an arc, and the only reason to possibly see this movie is John C. Reilly.
Absolutely.
Who is playing a guy named Hank Marlowe, who's a World War II lieutenant who's been stranded there for more than 25 years. And he is playing this role with the right kind of crazy. And he has a pretty interesting arc. Now, he's not the main character. He's not in the movie a whole lot.
He's not there till halfway through.
Exactly. With editing, they realized, oh, we have something here, because they kind of dovetail his story toward the end.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
And when he comes on the screen,
wait a minute.
I say, okay, now we got something.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm getting nothing out of John Goodman, one of our great actors.
Nothing at all.
But the character is nothing. Samuel L. Jackson is playing screaming Samuel L. Jackson yet again.
Yeah.
Fine. Cast him perfectly.
Yep.
He's okay. Brie Larson, no reason to be there. Tom Hiddleston, you're right, completely blank character.
What's he doing?
He doesn't do anything in the movie. But once they get to the John C. Reilly part in the middle of the jungle, okay, now you got something.
And here's a guy who started off with amazing dramatic work, and then, of course, now he's known as a Step Brothers guy, but he's sort of doing this interesting mixture of both of those things that he's so good at. Anyway, I thought he should have been the main character here. And he's the only interesting part of Kong Skull Island. Now, the other thing that we can talk about, which I don't think is a spoiler, is because Legendary has been talking about this, the film studio, for months now. They want to make this a part of the recently rebooted Godzilla universe. Back in 2014, there's a director named Gareth Edwards who made a war movie with a monster in it. It was called Godzilla. I don't know if you saw it, but it's very much a war movie with paratroopers and all kinds of military stuff and separation from families. Oh, by the way, here's Godzilla. Well, it's interesting that this is set in the same universe because this is also a war movie. It's a Vietnam-era war movie. Let's crank up the Rolling Stones and let's have all the needle drops. But yet,
more
here's
of
a
the
giant,
Apocalypse Now ripoff.
Yeah, and here's a giant King Kong. I'm not sure that audiences, perhaps I'm way off base here, and the audience can tell me how wrong I am. Are people super excited to see Kong and Godzilla fight yet again? Because I don't think they are.
I see no hands.
I don't think they are. And yes, it's the only movie released this weekend, but I'm not sure this is going to do well enough to make the studio decide to move forward with this. I wouldn't be surprised if the whole thing is called off.
But really? Who do you root for? Because doesn't Kong and Godzilla both beat the crap out of
everything? They already did this. They did this back in the late 70s, early 80s. Man in Suit was not very good, but Legendary thinks we have something big here, we're going to watch. That's why Kong is so big, so we can go against Godzilla. The timeline doesn't work at all, because 2014 was set in the current time, right? And so, did they just not say anything about Kong for 30 years, and then all of a sudden, it makes no sense, really, and it seems like a weird shoehorning thing for them to try to do.
Yeah, I don't need to see that. I didn't go see the Godzilla movie. I've never seen a Godzilla movie, and yet I've seen every Kong movie. Mm. What's wrong with me?
I'm more of a Godzilla guy. I actually like Godzilla.
What was
sort of goofy.
Mothra?
Sure, and Rodan, that's all in the same universe. And this film studio owns all those characters, so they want them to fight. I just don't know if the audience will care.
Why do we need those characters to fight when there could be a compelling story told about each one as they go forward? Is it kind of like what Marvel does with all of their superheroes, trying to get them all together?
Obviously, you have some Marvel people in this film. You've got Hiddleston, who's Loki. You have Brie Larson, who's going to be Captain Marvel next year. And you have Nick Fury himself, Sam Jackson. So they've already hired a bunch of Marvel people for this.
So are these monsters not going to be the Revengers?
Yes. The next movie that's coming out is a sequel to that 2014 Godzilla. It's called Godzilla King of Monsters. They've already cast the little girl from Stranger Things. She's going to be in it. And other. But again, who cares?
And Kong is over there going, King of Monsters? Hey, I'm... You didn't give me the king!
But what happens? Like, do they bring him... we can't talk too much about it because we can't talk spoilers, but in the next film, do they bring him to the stage? And then what happens? How much older is he now? Is he 30 years older now? Because the Godzilla timeline does not work.
I don't know.
And if you watch that Godzilla film, people seemed freaked out by a giant monster. It wasn't like, oh yeah, remember that ape from 30 years ago? So that just, it doesn't. The cart is before the horse yet again, and they think the audiences are going to pony up all the dollars and we're going to have this giant movie. Again, I would not be surprised if they cancel the whole
thing. Maybe it's Kong versus the previous Godzilla. Maybe the Godzilla that you saw in 2014 was the child of... Who knows?
But then people couldn't see it. It would have to happen off-site, almost like a Skull Island type.
All right, now let me ask you this.
Oh, Lord.
Will you at least concede that the CGI is very, very good in this? It's state-of-the-art animation.
I think the sense of scale is also very nice. I like this Kong being so huge and towering above the trees.
When
That's
he
very
walks
nice.
Through a lake and you see the water rippling and there's that whole valley behind him, that's beautifully done.
And there's a lot of on-location shooting, too, that they did in Vietnam. And a lot of that was not green screen. And so you can really tell it actually looks like a lived-in, you know, not a movie set. So that's nice, too. I mean, if you are going to see it on IMAX or 3D, it will look nice. You'll just be bored.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
Oh, Lord, I'd give this a 3.
I'm giving John C. Reilly. I'm giving it a 6.5.
Okay.
And it's only saved by John C. Reilly. Now, I preceded all of this by saying I got exactly what I expected going in. That doesn't mean I was expecting a great movie. When I went into John Wick 2, I wasn't expecting a great movie, and I was pleasantly surprised, which is why I gave it an 8 or an 8.5.
Yeah, I love
it. I can't remember. But when I went to this, I was kind of expecting like a 5 or a 6, and so a 6.5 because of John
C.
Reilly.
You got.
Yeah.
I would have liked, had they written the other characters to the level that they wrote John C. Reilly's character, had Hiddleston had some sort of double cross, or Brie Larson was doing something on her
anything.
Own. I mean, something. Then I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more, and had Kong had a bit more range change than just plain anger. Again, we can't talk too much without spoilers, but never mind. I'll just talk off the air. I had another thing about the ending, but I don't want to give it away.
Okay. He is angry, isn't he?
Well,
Kong is pretty angry.
Kong. And Max, is pretty angry at Kong.
He gets love-struck later on, though, right? I mean, when you think of King Kong, don't you think he's just a lovey-dovey kind of guy? When you think Valentine's Day, you just think King Kong, right?
The question that you brought up earlier, Dan, they never show him going to the bathroom, so maybe he's backed up. Maybe.
Oh, could be. Yeah, they never show Kong relieving himself in any one of these movies. I think that they need to add that.
Max, what do you think?
I would agree with that. I think that it would make for an interesting chase if he's relieving himself while people...
it as a weapon. Can you imagine how powerful that stream is?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's climbing and things are dropping.
Hey, have you never driven down Market Street behind a hansom cab and had to go around what was left behind?
Hell yeah.
All animals do that. Why isn't Kong doing that?
I know.
All right. The next movie we're going to review here is Before I Fall, which sounds like it fits right in with what you're talking about, but it's not. This is a small little independent movie that wants to be something more, and see if you can figure out what more it wants to be.
Okay.
In this movie, you have a teenager named Samantha who wakes up at the same time to the same song playing on the radio every day and relives the same day.
Is it I Got You, Babe?
No, it's not. But you say to yourself, okay, it's a remake of Groundhog Day. But wait, I saw a movie about a teenager named Samantha who wakes up every day and relives every day, in which she rides to school with her three best friends who are all privileged, upscale, snotty, cool teenagers who look down on everyone else. Oh, so it's a remake of Mean Girls. No. There's also the part of this where Samantha gets a lot of roses from male admirers on Cupid's Day, which is 2 days before Valentine's Day.
What?
Cupid.
At school. But she doesn't recognize that the guy she's with is not right for her, and the guy who she's paying no attention to is right for her. That's about every teen comedy from John Hughes to the present.
And a Taylor Swift song.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So you have a combination of the three of those, and this movie, Before I Fall, takes all of those plot lines and meshes them into a story that only kind of works because of an actress by the name of Zoe Deutsch. The only thing I know her from is that she was the college student who fell for James Franco in Why Him?
Mm-hmm.
With Franco and Megan Mullally and Bryan Cranston.
She's also in a movie that nobody saw that I believe Mark Waters and Daniel Waters worked on. They were behind Heathers, called Vampire Academy. It's actually pretty funny. It's what you would think it is. It's Heathers with fangs.
Yeah.
And she was the lead in that, and that was supposed to break her wide open. It did not happen. I don't know if she just has a horrible agent or what, because she's a great screen presence. Obviously, she comes from her father, Howard, the director, and Leah Thompson, who's her mom. She looks just like her mom.
Yes, she does.
And I'm waiting for her to get a great part so people can start talking about what a nice actor she is, because up until this point, it's been dud after dud after dud after dud. What? And I feel for her, because by this time in her career, her mom was already a superstar. So
yeah, but name something else besides Back to the Future and Caroline in the Closet. Caroline in the Closet?
Caroline in the City.
Caroline in the City,
I'm sorry. Veronica's Closet.
I was thinking of something I found online. That's a completely different movie.
Two bona fide classics, thank you very much. Howard the Duck, I Rest My Case, and Space Camp, done.
Oh, you're right. In this movie, Zoe Deutsch is Samantha, and she actually imbues her with a humanity that is not apparent at first, because she's one of these snotty rich kids. But as she goes through this day over and over again, she grows, and of course she has to. It's the Bill Murray Groundhog Day model. Unfortunately, the rest of the movie isn't as good as Deutsch's, and it falls really easily into plot traps straight out of those other movies. And worst of all, it lacks a sense of humor. Remember, for Groundhog Day, you had, was that Harold Ramis wrote and directed that?
Yes. Ivan Reitman.
I think they were both involved. Okay. And Bill Murray.
Of course.
And, of course, Mean Girls, you got Tina Fey in the movie, and she wrote the movie. So there's comedy throughout it built into the characters. In this one, no one has a sense of humor. And as she wakes up every day, fully knowing that she's going to encounter the same situations she did yesterday. Now, remember, in Groundhog Day, Phil Connors, the Bill Murray character, he's stuck in this town, and he only has what he was wearing on his back when he got to that town of Punxsutawney. This is a privileged teenage girl who wakes up in her own house with all of her clothes in her whole closet, and yet every day she wears the same dress.
Wow.
You would think after a while she'd think, you know what, I'm going to go with the red one today instead of the blue one. I mean, she's learning to be a better person, but not a better dresser. Come on.
I have a question.
Yes.
The title, Before I Fall.
Yes.
Where is she falling?
I don't know.
Okay.
I saw the whole movie. I watched all the way to the end.
It should be Mean Groundhog.
Yes. Well, the title's confusing. Before I Fall, how are you did she trip at one point and now she's like, oh, she's doing the Dick Van Dyke, like, jump across the ottoman? Like, now I'm not going to fall?
No.
Wow.
Now, I will grant you that because I'm neither a female nor a teenager, I'm not the target demo for this movie. But anybody who fits into those groups would be better off watching Groundhog Day or Mean Girls. I give it a 5 out of 10.
Hmm.
Before I Fall. Not worth your time.
Hmm.
And then the third movie we have to get to this week is one that we did not get to last week called Logan. Let me take a break, and we'll come back and talk about that Hugh Jackman Wolverine movie that you have seen and can review for us right after this on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Ian Guy, Stan Strauss. And Max on Movies, who I apologize, I have been not plugging your Saturday night thing. Is that still going on?
You know, as far as I know, Paul, every Saturday at 10 p.m. here on KTRS, you know, you can go to KTRS.com and look for the Max on Movies page. You can find all the show audio right there. So if you miss it Saturday nights because you actually are doing things and have a life, that's fine. You can go to KTRS.com and hear all of the audio with one click of a mouse right there.
There you go. All right. We've already reviewed Kong Skull Island, which Max hated, and I grudgingly gave a 6.5 to. He gave it a 3. I gave a 5 to Before I Fall.
Which, off the air, you told me what the title means, and that's extraordinary. I mean, I would have never thought that's what the title meant to Before I Fall.
Yeah, what I told you was I have no idea.
That's right.
They never explain it in the movie, and I have no idea what it means. And now the third movie that we have to get to, which opened last weekend, but we didn't get a chance to review, is Logan with Hugh Jackman. Is this his last time as Wolverine?
He says it's his last time as Wolverine. I wouldn't be surprised if he showed up for a cameo, you know, in like a future movie, like a Deadpool movie or a future. I mean, this franchise made him a star. If they ask him, hey, put on the claws and do a walk-on, he might. But
that's not how you get him to do it. You write a really large check.
Oh, that's right.
There's no, hey, would you like to?
This is true.
Here's how much we're going to pay you.
Well, if they do that, I think he will come back. Both he and Patrick Stewart, who plays Charles Xavier, they both have said this is their last time playing these roles. They both originated these roles 17 years ago. But now, since then, Patrick Stewart said, I might do a cameo
here
and there.
If the check clears.
Exactly, yeah. So never say never with reunion tours or farewell tours or this is my last time playing the character.
Yeah.
But what I can tell you is no matter if Hugh Jackman came back and played the role 16 more times, this movie is set up as the last Wolverine story. So no matter what, it will always be the last Wolverine story. It's set so far in the future that the previous X-Men continuity doesn't really matter, which, after 9 films in 17 years, is a relief, I think, for audiences. They don't have to worry about catching up with who did this and who double-crossed who. It's sort of the exact opposite of the Marvel Universe these days, where you have to have a roadmap to figure out how the characters relate. In this one, all you need to know is that there is a mutant named Wolverine. As long as you know that, which most people have over the last 17 years, they know that,
mm-hmm.
then you can enjoy this movie for what it is, which is the last story involving this character.
Okay, who's Logan?
Is this a true story?
It is based on it. Well, you know what's funny about that, Dan, is in this movie, the X-Men have become legends, and there are comic books that have been written and drawn about the X-Men. And so kids are running around reading the comic books, and they've got toys, even though this is set so far in the future that mutants have been wiped out. There are no more mutants. Logan is one of the names that Wolverine has gone by in the course of his life. He is a fast-healing, 150-ish-year-old mutant who has had amnesia problems for various reasons. And now he's working
as 150.
Yeah, he's working.
His short-term memory's gone.
He's working as a limo driver.
Like Frank.
He's working as a he's working as a limousine driver for hire at the beginning of this movie, which is an interesting thing to watch this, you know, super berserker, hardcore, you know, buff Wolverine reduced to, you know, carting around bachelorette parties and stuff. But that's because he's so far away from being a hero at this point. He is protecting Professor X, who's a telepath who's suffering from dementia. Now, this is sad, even if you're not the world's most powerful telepathic mutant, because he's suffering from dementia. He actually has been christened as a weapon of mass destruction by the government, and they would like to secure him, so Wolverine is protecting him. This movie is not really, I wouldn't compare it to other superhero films. I don't think it has a lot in common with other superhero films, at least not the superhero hero films that we have been used to. This is much more similar to a Western. It reminded me a lot of Unforgiven. And there is a young girl named Laura who has some of the same mutant powers and claws as Wolverine that he takes in under his wing. And I'll let you discover what their connection is. But their part of the movie, their road trip part, reminded me of Paper Moon. So all of a sudden, I'm watching an X-Men movie, the 10th movie, the 10th time that Hugh Jackman has played this character over the last 17 years. And I'm thinking of Unforgiven, and I'm thinking of old Westerns, and I'm thinking of Paper Moon. That's extraordinary that this movie is able to break out of its genre conventions. The last comic book movie that I can remember doing that was The Dark Knight, which was a movie that a lot of people who don't care about Batman really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I think with this one, you don't have to care about Wolverine. It's basically, it follows a couple of tropes. It's the one last job story, or it's the I'm going to retire story. That's all it is. And we've seen that before in, other, film noirs and Westerns. The performances, for what they are fantastic. I don't think there's ever been an actor who has cared more about a comic book character than Hugh Jackman has with this kind of goofy character of Wolverine. He is committed, even when the movies have let him down and been less than stellar.
Mm-hmm.
James Mangold directed this. He did 3:10 to Yuma, the remake. He also did Walk the Line. And he brings that more adult-minded filmmaking process to a comic book film. It is rated R. I would not bring a little kid to this. There's nudity. There's beheadings. There's lots of stabbings. And if your kid loves Wolverine and wants to go see a Wolverine movie, there's 9 other ones that they could watch that are PG-13. This one, I think it's for the older set. There's plenty of older people, 40 plus, who grew up with this character reading comics. That's who this movie is for.
Okay. On a scale of 10?
I'd give it a 9.
Wow.
For what it is, it's one of the better comic book films I think I've ever seen.
And I heard that it made like $250,000 around the world last weekend.
The word of mouth is going to be very strong. I think it will give Kong Skull Island a run for its money.
Wow.
I think so.
Okay. A few other showbiz stories we have to get to. One of the things that became a meme after the Oscars was not just the Best Picture flub, which, we've settled that and fired those accountants. Okay. But you must have seen the video of Nicole Kidman clapping, not clapping.
Well, it's a seal clap.
Where she's banging her...
Doing the Paula Abdul.
Yes.
Basically, Paula Abdul in American Idol.
Her palms aren't even touching completely. Mm-hmm. It's more like the heels of her palms are touching, but the fingers, it's like she was trying to make sure that the fingers never came anywhere closer than they needed to.
Do you know why she did that?
Oh, I saw the explanation.
I know too.
It has to do with her jewelry.
Yeah, rented jewelry.
she had huge rings on.
Yeah.
Now, I don't understand this at all, because I will tell you, as an adult who's been on the planet for a few years and has been clapping for most of my life, even as a child, what does it matter what's on the outside of your hand? Don't you clap with the inside of your hand?
Yeah. But this was all rented jewelry.
I don't care. The jewelry's on the outside.
I know. But
on the outside, you just have the ring part.
She didn't want to mess it up or scratch it.
How would you?
Why? I don't understand why it's rented jewelry. Why they give you, or borrowed, rather.
Oh, no. It's all these the same reason that they get dresses and tuxes
and all that sort of stuff.
Advertising.
Yeah. Yeah, advertising.
So, who are you wearing? Yeah. What are you wearing?
Yeah, so when they can be on that pre-show with whoever those idiots are, they can ask them that question, and they can say it, and then that's the free publicity for whatever it is. And, they can wear $1 million worth of jewelry.
So
she's got rings on her hand, but I don't understand, unless she has the rings turned around to the inside, How does clapping like that hurt the rings?
You know, I'm never going to be invited to the Oscars, and plus I'm a guy, so I'm probably not going to have, you know, rented jewelry on. But I can't think of anything worse. I mean, I get frightened when I have a rental car that there's going to be some sort of damage to it, and I'm responsible. I can't imagine wearing multi-$1 million on me. What happens if something does break? All of a sudden, I've got to make three bad movies just to pay for it.
I wonder if when you rent a rental car, they make her fill out that form. All right, Ms. Kidman, do you want the liability insurance on this?
I'll bet they do, because I mean, think about it. You're at this event all night. There's all these people there that you're seeing. You could lose a ring. You could lose an earring. People lose earrings all the time.
Yeah.
The pressure would be too much for me, let alone if I was going to win an award. Do I still have my earring on?
Also, where is the mentality? And again, I'm talking about Nicole Kidman here, not a rocket scientist. I understand that. You're going to an event where you know you're going to have to clap several times.
Yeah.
Why don't you say to them, you know, I'm going to have to clap a lot. I'd like to have smaller rings or maybe a few less rings so that I can do this instead of the seal with the palms.
Can I have some clapping rings, please?
I need the clapping rings.
What jewelry are you wearing? Claw machine up at Denny's.
Just wear brass knuckles instead.
That would be fantastic.
I know.
Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron are going to make a movie together called Flarsky, in which, get this, this is a stretch for him, Seth Rogen's going to play a schlubby guy.
What?
Who tries to reconnect with his childhood crush, Charlize Theron.
He's so refined.
He's an unemployed journalist who's battered by his own misfortune in self-destructive ways. She will be his former babysitter, who now happens to be one of the most powerful and unattainable women on Earth.
Oh, that's kind of creepy.
Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron.
The babysitter thing kind of takes it up a notch.
Indiana Jones is coming back for Epic Adventure number 5. Why wasn't this stopped after number 3? Wait a second. Haven't there already been 5?
No, there's 4. There's the original trilogy and then Crystal Skull.
Okay, that was the 4th one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, they're coming back for a 5th one. And yes, it will have Harrison Ford. And it will have Steven Spielberg directing it like he did the other 4.
Mm-hmm.
And the producers, again, are Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall. Interesting plot in this one. In this one, Indiana Jones crashes a small plane on a golf course, then gets another one and lands it on the taxiway instead of the runway at the airport.
I can see that.
It's more like a documentary about Harrison Ford's real life. Indiana Jones, he can't fly, is the subtitle of this
Harrison
one.
Harrison Ford has been strangely protective of Indiana Jones, not so much Han Solo. I mean, he famously wanted Han Solo to die in Return of the Jedi. He came back with Force Awakens, and that actually happened, spoiler alert. And now they've recast that. There's going to be a younger actor playing him in this Han Solo prequel film. He seems to not care about that, really. Like, fine, I'm Han Solo, whatever. Indiana Jones, which was originally going to be Tom Selleck, maybe he just wants to stick it to Tom Selleck after all this time that he's still playing the role.
Tom Selleck got the message.
I'm just not sure why after all this time, because he's one of the driving forces. He wants to do this 5th movie.
Which is ridiculous. He will be 77 years old.
I can't figure it out.
When the movie comes out in 2 years.
I really can't figure out why he had so little regard for Han Solo, but he wants to be Indiana Jones until he shuffles off this mortal coil.
I'm going after the Grail. And his teeth fall out. I need to find my teeth.
The 3rd season of Fargo, which I'm looking forward to. They now have a debut date, April 19th on FX. This one's going to star, you know, every season of Fargo, it's a different cast of characters and a different timeline as well. None of them came directly from the movie, but although they've been inspired by it. And I will say, the first 2 seasons of Fargo were among the most brilliant TV that's been out there in the last 5 years or so. Season 3 will star Ewan McGregor as twins, and an actress named Carrie Coon as a police chief named Gloria Burgle. Do you know Carrie Coon?
Yeah, Carrie Coon was in Gone Girl. She was Ben Affleck's sister in Gone Girl.
Okay.
She was really good in that film.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead will be the less successful twins' girlfriend, and there's also a mysterious loner who is also involved in the show. I don't know any more about that, but I will tell you, that's one of those shows that I refuse to watch trailers or teasers for.
The less you know, the better.
Yeah, I want to see it fresh every episode.
Has there ever been a loner who's just been completely approachable and sunny and carefree and gay? Like, oh, look at that approachable loner.
I also have 2 movies that I think you might want to add to your Netflix or Amazon Prime queue. I have put them on the movies you might not know list on my website. One of them is Moon. Did you see this Sam Rockwell movie?
Fantastic film.
He is the sole resident of a lunar base where there's an automated mining system that is sending back some stuff that we're digging up on the moon and sending back here, and it's helping Earth's energy crisis. But he's the only one on the moon, except for this robot that is voiced by Kevin Spacey. And then something happens up there that I cannot tell you without spoiling the movie.
Nope. That's all you need to know.
But Sam Rockwell, who I think is one of my favorite character actors of modern day, is fantastic in this thing. It's a little bit like The Martian in that he's alone up there and has to talk to the Gertie,
yes,
the character that Kevin Spacey does the voice of.
But unlike The Martian, where you have this team of people trying to get him home,
yeah,
this is much more of a solitary affair, directed by David Bowie's son.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Duncan Jones. It was his first movie.
Oh, it's very good. I give it a 7.5. It's called Moon. You might want to check that out. And the other one is a movie that's a documentary, and it's actually showing on one of the Stars channels. If you have that on your cable system, you can look for a movie called Lightning in a Bottle. It's a documentary about a one-night-only concert at Radio City Music Hall in 2004 to celebrate the 100th birthday of the blues. Mm. I don't know how they decided that the blues started in 1904, and that 2004 was the anniversary. Was that when W.C. Handy wrote St. Louis Blues? I don't know. But the talent on stage at that concert included some of the greats of the genre, including my favorites, Buddy Guy and B.B. King and Bonnie Raitt, and classic performers like Odetta and Dr. John and Jimmy Vaughn from the and Kim Wilson from the Fabulous Thunderbirds, John Fogerty, Alison Krauss, Keb Moe, even older people like Clarence Gatemouth Brown and Honey Boy Edward. Ruth Brown, Mavis Staples, Natalie Cole, they're all in there. It was directed by Antoine Fuqua.
Oh, sure.
Who did a bunch of movies with Denzel Washington.
Yep. Yeah,
including
Equalizer and Training Day.
Didn't he do
Magnificent Seven
remake?
Yeah.
His name sounds so dirty.
Yeah, Antoine. It was executive produced.
1904 was when Leadbelly sold his soul to Satan. Maybe that's when the blues began.
Okay. It was executive produced by Martin Scorsese. If you're a blues fan at all, either get this one from some streaming service, or if you have Stars, you can find it there. It's probably still running for the next week or so. It's called Lightning in a Bottle. It's fantastic. And that's all the showbiz stuff we have for this week. We'll be back with the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News and Mike Evans all in the next hour here on the Big 550 KTRS.